Welcome to the Canadian SME Small Business Podcast, a podcast for Canadian small businesses. We interview Canadian experts and entrepreneurs to provide expert insight into marketing, innovation, business leadership, technology, and trends that impact small businesses.
Whether you're just getting started or already established, UPS is here to help you make the most of your time. Their services, tools, expertise, and team of UPS Small Business Ambassadors can help businesses of all sizes simplify processes, improve customer experience, and guide you on the path to growth. My name is Elaine Tancomo, founder of Easy Daisies, Daily Visual Schedules for Kids, and I want to invite you to visit UPS.com to learn more and save up to 52% or more on shipping. This is a paid advertisement.
Hi, this is Kripa Anand, and welcome to the Canadian SME Small Business Podcast, where we explore vital topics impacting Canadian businesses. Today, we are delving into a crucial aspect of modern sustainability, extended producer responsibility, and its role in fostering a circular economy. The way we manage waste and resources is rapidly evolving in Canada. Now, producers across various industries are increasingly becoming responsible for the entire life cycle of their products and packaging. This shift not only impacts environmental outcomes, but also presents significant opportunities and obligations for businesses of all sizes. Joining us today is Alan Langdon, Chief Executive Officer at Circular Materials. Alan is a leader in waste management and sustainability, having spearheaded successful programs like Return It in British Columbia and Recycle BC. As CEO of Circular Materials, he's at the helm of designing and implementing EPR programs for paper and packaging across Canada, including the new Blue Box system in Ontario. So before further ado, let's welcome him. Alan, welcome to the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here with us.
Thanks so much, Kripa. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Amazing. Now, Alan, as CEO of Circular Materials, you're guiding Canada through a significant shift in how we manage waste. Let's start with the fundamentals. What exactly is extended producer responsibility for those, you know, who don't know what this term means? And for our Canadian small and medium-sized business owners, how exactly would a business, you know, come to know if they are obligated under EPR regulations?
It's a great question. So extended producer responsibility, or it's, as it's known by its acronym EPR, is a policy approach in which producers, so the businesses that supply packaging and paper, are financially responsible and accountable for those materials in over their full life cycle.
Right.
So recycling programs founded on the principles of extended producer responsibility improve recycling rates and encourage the more efficient use of materials. So these programs have to date been predominantly in Europe. They are started to grow here in Canada. Well, most jurisdictions in Canada will have a functioning EPR program for Blue Box by the end of 2027. And it's also starting to take on in the United States as well, where seven jurisdictions have passed EPR regulations. So in terms of who's obligated, the producers, producer obligation is based on three factors. One is residency. So each jurisdiction has guidelines for determining residency. Typically, it's a producer would be a brand holder, a brand owner, resident of Canada. There's then a hierarchy of responsibility. So there's various hierarchies to determine if a brand owner, an importer, or a retailer is responsible. And when I think of some of the small and medium-sized businesses who might be involved in importing or are retailers, anything that isn't produced in Canada, they would be responsible for managing that material and for the EPR obligations for that material. And then supply of designated material, what and how much a producer is supplying to consumers. Those are the three key factors. So it can be, there is a certain threshold for obligation in each of the jurisdictions based on revenue from sales, which could be, you know, anywhere from $750,000 to $2 million. So if your sales are below that, you wouldn't, wouldn't be obligated under regulation, as well as how much material you supply. So that could be, there's some jurisdictions that have complex structures. For a lot of jurisdictions, they just say, if you supply less than one ton of material into the marketplace, then you're not obligated.
Oh, that's a very crucial clarification. I'll let you complete. Go ahead.
No, no. And I was just going to say, you know, we know that this can feel intimidating for producers, particularly smaller to medium-sized producers, yeah, to figure out. So that's why one of the key parts of our service offerings is we have a dedicated customer relations team, which is, you know, there to support producers with their questions and help them in determining, you know, what are their obligations under EPR and whether they are in fact a producer or whether they qualify, whether they're not obligated because they don't meet one of these thresholds in the various jurisdictions.
The one thing is clear that, you know, understanding these obligations is essential for producers across various sectors. Now, this regulatory shift, you know, aims to drive greater responsibility. How exactly does circular materials, you know, specifically support producers in, you know, meeting their ERP obligations across Canada? If you can just, you know, quickly shed some light on that. And also go ahead and let us know about the full service offerings that you guys provide.
So we are what's known globally as a producer responsibility organization, or a PRO. Mm-hmm. So as a PRO, we support producers in meeting the obligations under the EPR regulations, specifically for packaging and paper. So there are other programs for electronics, batteries, tires, mm-hmm, but specifically for packaging and paper blue box products, we are, you know, the Canadian, or, you know, the largest Canadian, yeah, PRO. So what do we do? So first of all, we design and operate EPR recycling programs on behalf of producers. So that means in jurisdictions like Ontario, Alberta, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and the Yukon, we are actually creating the design of the recycling program and ensuring that it's put together in a way that will maximize the recovery of material on behalf of producers so that they can meet the performance requirements of the regulation. That leads into the second thing, is we ensure that producers meet their regulatory compliance obligations outlined in either a regulation or in a stewardship plan. Those vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but essentially, producers are compelled to ensure that a certain amount of material is recycled, and those targets are often done on a material-specific category. So it might say that in, you know, this jurisdiction, you need to ensure, like Ontario, that you're recycling 55% of the rigid plastics that are put on the marketplace. From there, we need to manage, assist producers in reporting. And so producers would provide us with data on the material they supply to residents. We would help them in putting together those reports and helping meet the obligations under the regulation, which are to report on how much material they supply into the marketplace. And then from there, producers would pay fees to a PRO, and the PRO uses the fee revenue to support the collection, sorting, and recycling material. So fees for circular materials are done on a material basis. So for every kilogram of material you put in the marketplace, there would be a certain fee attached to it. And our fees are meant to support the a level playing field and the fair, efficient allocation of costs to the various participating producers. So we spend a lot of time in ensuring that our fees are fair and reflective of the true cost of managing these materials, and that each producer is only paying their fair share in terms of paying the cost of what it would be to manage their specific materials within the system.
No, that definitely makes sense. And, you know, that sounds like a very, like it's a very comprehensive support system, helping businesses, you know, navigate these new requirements effectively. So kudos to you guys for, you know, actually being able to do that. It's amazing. Now, before we go any further, here's a special message for all of our listeners, especially for the Canadian entrepreneurs. Are you aware of your business's extended producer responsibility obligations? Understanding EPR can not only ensure compliance, but also unlock new opportunities for your business and contribute to a more sustainable Canada. Visit Circular Materials website to learn more and see how you can be a part of the solution. But let's continue our conversation with Alan. Now, Alan, beyond compliance, EPR promises significant advantages as well. So what are the overarching benefits of extended producer responsibility for communities, businesses, and the environment? And how exactly does it, you know, advance the circular economy, quote unquote? Go ahead.
Yeah. So once EPR is implemented in a jurisdiction, what we see is often a transition to a consistent material list. So prior to EPR, each municipality or each local government tends to have its own separate material list. Yeah. In jurisdictions like BC, where it has been for 10 years since we were involved in the launch of that program, as well as new jurisdictions like Ontario and other places, there'll be a consistent material list, meaning that we'll have consistent collection of material across jurisdictions. So if you live in one part of Ontario, you'll be able to put the same material in your blue box that you would in Toronto.
Right.
And also that there's an integrated material management supply chain, that we're working to ensure that the material is collected and that we're tracking it through the system and that we're ensuring that the maximum amount of material can be recovered so that our producers can meet their targets. We also see that materials begin to move into a loop and can be reused as recycled content and new packaging and products. So circular materials in particular, one of our founding objectives was to create a more circular system where our producers could access the material for our system and be able to use that recycled content and new packaging. We also find that EPR enables innovation, operational efficiencies, and increased standard levels that we don't see. Overall, what we're seeing is we create a more optimized system, one where there's greater transparency and there's greater assurance to both regulators, our producers, and as well as to the average resident, that the work being done to recycle this material is actually resulting in positive outcomes and the material is actually recycled. And then, I think from that point of view, EPR is just recognized as one of the most effective mechanisms for improving recycling rates. So in jurisdictions without EPR, we see recycling rates are starting to stagnate or even, move backwards. And so EPR is seen as a method to encourage more system-based approach so that we can ensure that those recycling rates are improved and that we're actually getting higher recovery of material from these systems.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Those would be very powerful benefits. I think it demonstrates that EPR is not just a regulatory burden, as you mentioned, but it's a pathway, I guess, to, tangible economic and environmental improvements. Now, you recently celebrated a significant program expansion, right? Specifically of the EPR program in New Brunswick, bringing recycling services to communities for the first time. Can you share a brief anecdote about meeting community leaders, whose lives have been positively impacted by this program?
Absolutely. So yeah, we did recently launch or celebrate the expansion of our program in New Brunswick, which is bringing curbside recycling to over 20,000 households and 7 communities for the first time, including some First Nation communities. And I think for many of us, curbside recycling service is something we take for granted, but it was gratifying to see tangible examples of how EPR benefits these communities that previously didn't have that service and the environment. While speaking to community leaders who were so enthusiastic about bringing curbside recycling to their communities, and in particular First Nation leaders, I think, many of them had been working on this for years to ensure that their community could take advantage of the opportunities through an EPR program and having access to curbside recycling. And so it was really gratifying to be able to spend time with them and really hear about the benefits and the opportunities that was going to create for them and their communities.
Wow, that's truly a very heartwarming story, Alan. It brings a very human element to the significant work you're doing. And, it highlights the direct positive impact on daily lives of common people. Now, driving a circular economy requires foresight and strategic investment. From your perspective, Alan, why do you think, investment and innovation are, important in advancing the circular economy? And what crucial role do businesses have in fostering this evolution?
So from our perspective, based on our name, we think there's just so many opportunities to continue building a circular economy and a, more circular and sustainable future. We want to be involved and they're planning to be involved in new innovations and pilot programs to help drive new insights on how recycling can become more efficient and effective. So one of the goals and outcomes of EPR long term is to advance innovations in packaging design, recyclability, and recycling. So this happens when producers are responsible for the full full life cycle of their packaging. Because then it gives them insight into how to design packaging in a way that makes recycling easier and more effective. The challenge we have in the current system is no one's responsible and producers don't have insight and are unable to work with thousands of, local governments and municipal jurisdictions. But if we can work through one clear, easy to understand system and can get helpful and insightful input in terms of the impacts that their packaging is having on recycling, then there's right. a way that producers can start to have a key role in sort of the innovation from the packaging side, ensuring that we can, again, that the packaging being put into the marketplace can be recycled and that we can optimize the amount of material that we can recover from the system. And just as one final point on this subject is, you know, really all of it is based on partnerships. To advance the circular economy, it's going to take investment and participation from governments, producers, waste management companies, some industry associations, as well as residents to scale up recycling technologies that are needed for the future. And so we're really in that mode of trying to advance and establish as many partnerships as possible to be able to meet those objectives.
That's a critical point. Indeed, innovation is the engine that drives progress in recycling and material management. And, it's always great to hear about concrete examples. And I remember, reading about the beverage cup recycling or the Nespresso green bag recycling pilot project. Go ahead and tell us what they're about.
Yeah, so Nespresso has been a partner of ours. And as we expand the materials collected for recycling, specifically in Ontario, there are two things that we've been working on. One is a partnership with Nespresso, where we're pleased to collaborate them with on a green bag recycling program in London, Ontario. And that's really an easy way where residents can recycle their used aluminum capsules, Nespresso capsules, within the blue box system. So what it means is residents or consumers get a green bag. They put their used Nespresso capsules in the green bag. And then when the bag's full, they seal it up and then they can put it in their blue box. So London's the first municipality in Ontario to have this system. Okay. And we're hoping as we move forward into 2026, this system will become available to other municipalities in Ontario.
Right.
The other thing is we've been expanding the list of materials collected mm-hmm. in Ontario, and that includes an important initiative in the city of Toronto, where we've expanded the collection system to include both hot and cold beverage cups. Mm-hmm. So that's the first of its kind in Ontario in terms of moving forward to incorporating these materials into recycling systems. And it's the first step, and what we'll see is that by 2026, all municipalities in Ontario should be able to accept these materials. And so the information we're getting from the pilot will help inform the decisions we make on how we can manage these materials and ensure that they get recycled as they start to be accepted across Ontario starting next year.
Wow. Just thinking about these alternate materials, it brings so much joy and so much excitement and, what the world has to offer. Very interesting. And those are fantastic examples of how targeted innovation can create new solutions for challenging waste streams. Investment in innovation is clearly key to unlocking the full potential of a circular economy in Canada. And you just reiterated that. And now before we let you go, Alan, if there's any key insights or, takeaways or final piece of advice that you have for our listeners today, something that you want them to remember about this discussion, what would it be?
Yeah, really that just, prioritizing sustainability and circularity is only going to become more important for businesses as we look to the future. So, really encouraging small and medium business leaders to engage with circular materials and others on these topics, and really building it into the business, because these things aren't going away. I think all the reasons for the move to sustainable and circularity are still there, and we're conscious of wanting to work with small and medium sized businesses because it can be a daunting endeavor, but I think there's lots of opportunities for these businesses as these systems continue to expand and grow within the Canadian economy.
That's a very powerful and actionable message, Alan. So thank you so much for that. To conclude, if I were to give you a time machine right now and say, if I ask you to travel 10 or 15 years down into the future, how exactly would you envision the future of circular materials 15 years from now?
I think 15 years from now, circular materials will be at least a national, if not an international organization, and it'll be working with producers to ensure that the products that people purchase on the shelves at the grocery mm-hmm. store, at the retailer, meet a minimum percentage of recycled content, that we've established a circular system that makes it easier for producers to be able to to access recycled content and put it in their packaging. And that it's created greater transparency for the consumer so they understand what's being recycled, how it's being recycled,
right,
and why recycling is so important and how it contributes to making their communities a better place as part of the overall system.
Wow. So it's also a mindset shift in a way, right?
Absolutely.
Amazing. Alan, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kripya. I've really enjoyed it.
All right. That was an insightful conversation with Alan Langdon, CEO of Circular Materials, on extended producer responsibility, its benefits for communities and businesses, and the importance of investment and innovation in advancing Canada's circular economy. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Canadian SME Small Business Podcast. We really appreciate your continued support. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast for more expert insights and resources that can help your business thrive. You can also visit our website, CanadianSME.ca. And lastly, a very special thank you to our podcast partners, RBC, UPS, A1 Global College, and Google for their ongoing commitment to empowering SMEs. Until next time, keep innovating and striving for success, and we'll see you in the next episode. Kripa Anand signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Canadian SME Podcast. Please visit CanadianSME.ca to subscribe and join us next again as we share more expert advice from Canadian business leaders.